Hey, everybody. It is Thursday, March 14th, Pi Day. You're listening to the Mo News Podcast. I'm Moshe Wanunu.
And I'm Jill Wagner. This is the place where we bring you just the facts.
And we read all the news and read between the lines and recite however many numbers we have memorized from Pi, Jill. Explain to all those who may not know what Pi Day is.
Okay, Pi Day is an annual celebration of the mathematical constant pi. It's observed on March 14th because 3, 1, and 4 are the first three significant numbers of pi, and it was first celebrated in the United States back in 1988 by an employee of the San Francisco Science Museum. So 3.14, that's as far as I go, Moshe.
Yeah, so effectively, the calculation is the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. So it's an important mathematical number, and many folks, it's a game you play in school of how many numbers of pi you can memorize because it goes on and on and on. It has no end and no repeating pattern. And funny enough, as a mathematical nerd day, who else but Albert Einstein happened to be born on this day? We'll get to him and on this day in history. But Jill, if I was thinking about pies today, I much prefer the pie you can eat. And I give credit to the good folks at Google Trends, and they put out a map laying out the most searched pie in every single state. And I have to say, it's pretty diverse. You know, America's a very diverse country, but our pie preferences by state are incredibly diverse. If you actually go to all 50 states, 4 states prefer apple pie out of 50.
The right choice.
If something is as American as apple pie, only 4 states at the majority pie by search in 4 states. Then you have a Frito pie, which I have to be honest, I was unfamiliar with until this chart came out.
What is it?
It's a pie with Fritos on it. It has like chips on it. But then the good folks in Oklahoma have a Frito chili pie. And then you have like a cross section, like in Missouri, they love a custard pie. In Illinois, number one pie is strawberry cream pie. Wisconsin, honey pie. No surprise. Up in New England, in New Hampshire, Boston cream pie. Here in New York, number one most searched pie, raspberry pie.
Very interesting.
So the map is up on the Instagram account and see if you agree with your state's most searched pie.
Moshe, not that I want to spend a lot more time on pie, but dare I ask, what's your favorite kind of pie?
I have to say, looking at this map, I've never tried an Oreo pie. Ohio, that's the number one most searched pie in your state. So I'm curious about that. Georgia's also an Oreo pie state, I should note. I have to say, Al, there is a pie place. Sorry, I mean, Jill. Alex, my wife, is also a big pie fan, and she found this incredible pie place out in the North Fork of Long Island, Briarmere Pies. And I have to say, and I think you guys probably share this in your household, the raspberry cream pie from Briarmere Pie out in the North Fork of Long Island, I think is my favorite pie right now.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Whatever the pie that you brought over to my house, I think twice on your way back from out east, is by far my favorite pie. And I think that goes for my entire house. We polished it off.
Yeah.
Like my husband was eating it for breakfast. It was just outrageous.
Pie for breakfast. Jill, this pie, I'm obsessed with this pie, Matt, but I know we have a lot of news to get to. So let's get to the news and maybe we'll talk about pies another day.
The last thing I'll say is that if anyone out there has any info about the Frito pie, I'm definitely interested. I'd love a picture. I'm curious what this is.
We're looking at you, New Mexico, Montana, South Dakota, and Oklahoma. Number one pie in those states.
All right, now let's get to some news here. A TikTok ban passes the House. What are the chances that it will actually pass the Senate? It's the rematch very few people want, but Donald Trump and Joe Biden have officially secured enough delegates to be their party's respective nominee.
Jill, enough people to make them the nominees in early March, a very early date in typical presidential cycles.
Measles is spreading at a Chicago migrant shelter. What the CDC is doing to stop it. We're watching for a verdict in the trial of the father of the Michigan school shooter. Why Family Dollar is closing 1,000 stores. This is your brain. This is your brain on ultra-processed food. What the science says about... Yes, I used a reference from the 80s.
Elder millennial and above, you'll get it.
What the science says about ultra-processed food and your brain functions. A new survey finds that nearly 3 out of 10 Gen Z women identify as LGBTQ. And what former Alabama football coach Nick Saban says NIL, or name, image, and likeness, is doing to college sports. Plus, Moshe's on this day in history.
Jill, a little Air Force One, a little Albert Einstein, and a little Tupac for you on this day in history.
Okay, let's start with the latest on that bill that could lead to a ban on TikTok. On Wednesday, the U.S. House overwhelmingly passed legislation that could ban the app in the United States unless TikTok parts ways with its Chinese parent company, ByteDance. About 170 million Americans currently use TikTok. Lawmakers say they are concerned that the app poses a national security threat. At issue, ByteDance, which owns TikTok, is based in China, which means that the Chinese Communist Party has a lot of control over the app, which could potentially force TikTok to hand over data on U.S. users. Another concern, that it will use its algorithm to promote anti-U.S. messaging. So the bill passed 352 to 65, which, given the current state of the Congress, is pretty incredible.
Yeah, overwhelming margin there.
Democratic Congressman Jeff Jackson of North Carolina put out a video explaining why he voted for the bill, which he says will not actually result in a ban of TikTok. It is just telling ByteDance, which owns TikTok, to sell it.
Okay, but why? Why tell them they have to sell? The bottom line is there's a serious concern that the Chinese government can influence what you see on your For You page. They can tweak the algorithm in ways that may be helpful to them and harmful to us. It looks like they've done this around certain political subjects, and they have the potential to do much more. There is also a concern about them having access to your data, but frankly, that applies to all social media companies. They are all sucking up your data. But what those other social media companies don't have is an adversarial government that can influence the algorithm to manipulate the content you're shown in ways that will help them politically.
So that is a more nuanced explanation. The bill now heads to the Senate, where it is still not clear if there are going to be enough votes for it to pass.
Jill, I have to say, you played Jeff Jackson's explanation, and I thought he explained it very well, but you forgot to play there Nancy Pelosi's explanation as to why she banned it. Can we play that for the listeners right now?
It's not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner.
Did you get that, Jill? Tic-tac-toe, a winner. Just to make sure, let's play it one more time.
It's not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner.
Jill, how proud do you think former Speaker Pelosi was of that line as she gave that speech on the House floor?
And how many times did she practice it?
Right. Tic-tac, tic-tac-toe. And then actually, you can't see it because you're listening, but she actually makes a line with her hand twice, like a winner, like she's showing that it's tic-tac-toe. The point being that they've tried to ban this in the past. Those bans have not gone through. And so this is not a ban. This is a forced sale. And the House moved really, really quickly here. This was not a normal process for House legislation. This didn't come through the normal committee process. This went through the Special Committee on China, which was just set up in this Congress to handle issues related to China. This is probably their biggest achievement in 2 years. No major hearings were held with the people impacted. They basically just shoved this through really quickly. No amendments. In fact, some of the people who voted for this have said, I support this, but I think some changes need to happen, but we're not going to change anything here. So Senate, can you tweak some stuff? Which, by the way, House, you have the power to do amendments. You just chose not to. Also interesting in this vote, while the vote was overwhelming in that group of 65 who opposed it, included typical political enemies, Marjorie Taylor Greene and AOC. They both were actually in agreement on this, that this violates free speech. Also, the House Intelligence Committee chair, Jim Himes, said this felt rushed. So he was among these 60 plus members who voted against this. So now it heads to the Senate, right? If you remember Schoolhouse Rock, right? I'm just a bill on my way to becoming a law. I did the House. Now I got to go pass on the Senate side. The Senate is slow your roll right now. Guys, we got to look into this. We should actually have hearings. And so right now, the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, has said, I'm not yet committed to bring this TikTok bill to the floor. Senator Rand Paul, who is known to oppose many things, says he plans to put up a whole bunch of roadblocks to this. He has constitutional concerns over this. You have Liz Warren, who says that she believes that curbs to social media should be applied across the board. You have Lindsey Graham, Republican, who says he's conflicted now, mainly because he's very close to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is against this now. He says, while he did support a ban on TikTok a couple years ago, he's not so sure right now, and he'd like to look into this further. The Senate also might write up its own legislation. That could take weeks or months. They're developing their own bill here. So while the House moved quickly, the Senate, this could be a while. And remember, it's an election year, so stuff doesn't get passed. At the same time, the White House is saying, please pass this bill. The president wants to sign it, which is also interesting, Jill, because on February 11th, President Biden joined TikTok for the first time around the Super Bowl. So notable that he joined TikTok, but now he supports this forced sale of TikTok. As I mentioned, Trump now has reversed his previous support of a ban, which was his big deal when he was president. He says his bigger issue is with Facebook, with Mark Zuckerberg, who he has certain names for. So he doesn't believe in a TikTok ban here. He also happens to have gotten closer to some billionaires and rich people who support and invest in ByteDance and TikTok, which some people have noted here. So you have all of that. TikTok has blasted the House vote. They're urging the Senate to actually, quote, consider the facts here. China is saying that this is bullying. So that's what you hear from the Chinese government here. And so we'll see what happens. Even if the Senate passes this and President Biden signs it, there will still be challenges over the constitutionality of this law. So this is a fight while we're talking about it now in March of 2024. Jill, next year on the pod, in 2026 on the pod, I imagine we will still be giving you updates on this.
Another way to think about this bill in general, Scott Galloway, who hosts my other favorite podcast, Pivot, he has been in support of a sale. And he says a ban is really a misnomer because it isn't a ban. It is just a forced sale, kind of like what the congressman was saying. But the way that he explains the threat from TikTok is like if CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, Fox, just pick a cable network, were all owned by a Chinese company and then times that by 100 or whatever, because that is how many young people are on TikTok and whose worldviews are being shaped by the algorithm.
Yeah, a lot of people like to make the comparison here of like during the Cold War. Imagine if the Soviet Union owned an app that effectively almost every young person in America had. At the time, they were a major adversary. So they are saying that that's effectively what's happening here with China and their ability to influence things. Now, again, TikTok says, listen, we're a company based in Singapore and LA. Three of our five board members are American. We already house the data in Texas. We house your data here in America. We don't give our data to China, and we would refuse to do so. But they are fully owned by ByteDance. Now, ByteDance is nuanced too. It's not a fully 100% Chinese company. A good percentage of ByteDance is also owned by investors, including American and foreign investors, the Carlyle Group, KKR. So this is a very complex web here. Now, forcing a sale is something that's been done in the past. Remember the app Grindr? The U.S. actually forced the Chinese to sell that app years ago. Grindr, much smaller than TikTok. It was a much simpler situation. So this would be different. We also approach it at a different time between U.S.-China relations. So this is a fascinating situation unfolding here. And I think we've all been amazed at the speed in which the U.S. House moved in the past week, given that they're not known to move very quickly, Jill.
Well, it sounds like lawmakers are about to do their usual, which is a whole lot of nothing. So it moved quickly in the House, but it sounds like it's going to die in the Senate.
Congress does two things well, nothing and overreact. That is a quote, I believe, from Bob Dole's chief of staff in the 90s, Jill. I think he gets credit for it, but that's your typical deal on Capitol Hill. There's two speeds in which they operate.
All right, now a quick note about the presidential race, which is officially a rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Both President Biden and former President Trump secured their party's nominations for presidency after primaries on Tuesday night. So now mathematically, both men have a majority of delegates for this summer's conventions. The Republicans will formally nominate Trump at their convention in Milwaukee in July. The Democrats have their convention 90 miles to the south in Chicago in August.
Jill, do you remember Wayne's World?
Yes, I do.
Since we're making early 90s references here. So every time I hear Milwaukee, I always think about the Wayne's World line where Wayne and Garth are in with Alice Cooper and they're in Milwaukee. And Alice Cooper goes, actually, it's pronounced Milwaukee, which is Algonquin for the good land. Anyway, I hope someone gets that reference out there in the pod land today.
I know they will, Mosh. That's our generation.
Yes, Milwaukee. Anyway, back to politics here for a second. We got some news also yesterday on Donald Trump's legal issues in Georgia. The judge overseeing the Georgia election interference case actually dismissed a couple of the charges against Trump, but the rest of the racketeering indictment remains intact. So there were 13 charges against Trump. It is down to 10 criminal charges against Trump. Still undecided, will Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis be removed after her romantic relationship came out with the prosecutor, in addition to other alleged unethical behavior there? So we're still waiting on that decision, and that could really change the momentum or stop all momentum for this case. That relationship was with Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade, who she hired in a special process, and then turned out had a personal relationship with him. We've told you about the hearings that have been held on that in recent weeks. The judge is expected to make a ruling on that in the next couple of days here. Jill, because there's just so much legal news related to this campaign, there's also another update on Hunter Biden. We got a date yesterday on his trial. That is set to start in June. That is the felony gun charge trial. He applied for a gun, lied on the application that he was drug-free. He wasn't drug-free, so they are prosecuting him for that. So that is, I believe, your update here on Trump and Biden legal news. All right, we have a lot more to get to, including today's speed read and on this day in history. But first, a message from a couple of our sponsors. We're going to begin with Good Chop, one of our newest partners here at Mo News. They offer fully customizable boxes of high-quality meat and seafood delivered to your door on your schedule. The products here are vacuum-sealed, frozen at peak freshness, so you can stock your freezer and have great meat, great fish, ready to go. They offer over 70 high-quality cuts, grass-fed ribeyes, prime filet mignon. They have salmon, Pacific cod, scallops, shrimp, a whole variety of options. We've tried the chicken. We've tried the salmon. Both came in great. Also, thanks to my wife's incredible recipes. But the meat and the fish have been great. We should also note that by using Good Chop, they exclusively get their product from American farms and fisheries. So you can support your local family farms and independent ranchers right here in the U.S. The average price per meal of Good Chop starts at just under $4. And what's also great, especially if you're worried about those antibiotics, those hormones, those artificial ingredients, well, don't worry about that in Good Chop. They source meat without any of those, only the good stuff. So right now, there's a great deal for all of you in the Mo News community. Go to goodchop.com/MoNews120. That is goodchop, CHOP.com/MoNews120. Use the code MoNews120 to get $120 off your first four boxes. Again, the code here, MoNews120, over at goodchop.com/MoNews120.
All right, now to one of our longtime sponsors, Athletic Greens. We're always talking about health trends and food trends on this podcast and how hard it is to really get all of your nutrients. Well, one way to get all the important ones is through Athletic Greens AG1 powder. I drink AG1 in the mornings. It is just one scoop with a glass of water. It is easy and quick, and it lets you get on with your day knowing that you've gotten over 75 important ingredients, including tons of vitamins and minerals. It also has pre and probiotics to support digestion and gut health. I've had friends who tell me that they take it in the morning and they look at it like an insurance policy. They have their AG1 and then they feel like they are covered for the day, at least in terms of getting all of their nutritional elements that they need. With your first purchase of AG1, Athletic Greens is giving Mo News listeners a free one-year supply of their vitamin D and five free travel packs of AG1. Just visit drinkag1.com/MoNews to take advantage of this offer. You can get a discounted monthly subscription or try it one time for just a month. Again, that is drinkag1.com/MoNews, MoNews, for this special deal, and really start to take ownership of your health. All right, time now for the speed read from the Associated Press. Seven people living at a Chicago shelter for migrants have tested positive for measles since last week. Now the CDC is on the ground to help city and state officials' response to the infections, including vaccination efforts. So eight infections total have been reported in the city since Thursday, with the Chicago Department of Public Health saying it was the first instance of measles being detected locally since 2019. Measles is extremely contagious, and it's still very common in a lot of countries outside of the United States. Nearly 900 residents have received vaccines since Thursday night, officials said, and the city's health commissioner says that the measles cases were acquired here in the United States.
Yeah, measles was a disease that they felt was effectively eradicated here in the U.S. But in recent years, with a bit less in the way of vaccine intake, you've seen some of these cases rise up. And then specifically, this is a big issue among the migrant population. Tens of thousands of migrants have arrived in Chicago in the last couple of years. Many of them have been bussed up from the governor of Texas. That's been a huge issue between Illinois and Texas. Part of the effort as migrants come in is to provide them with medical care, vaccinations, treatment of conditions. But the situation along the border, given the large numbers, is a major issue. Doctor and drug shortages, availability and affordability of routine care. And that's also an issue in these migrant shelters. We should note in particular, there's been a whole number of Venezuelans that have come through the border here, and they have one of the lowest vaccination rates when it comes to kids.
From NBC News, a Michigan jury will continue deliberations today on whether to find the father of a school shooter guilty or innocent. We told you about the involuntary manslaughter trial of James Crumbly. He is accused of failing to safely store a gun that allowed his teenage son, Ethan, to kill four students back in 2021 at a school shooting in suburban Detroit. During closing arguments in the Michigan courtroom, the Oakland County prosecutor played a frantic 911 call that was placed by Crumbly after the rampage, saying that he, quote, raced home to check on the weapon. Crumbly bought that 9mm gun, which came with a cable lock, 4 days before the shooting as a present for his then 15-year-old son. The prosecution said the deaths were preventable and foreseeable if Crumbly had done any number of, quote, tragically small efforts. The prosecutor attempted to undercut the defense by telling jurors that parents can be responsible gun owners no matter if their child is planning a mass shooting.
The defense attorney, in return, said in their closing arguments that the prosecution had to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt and that it presented no evidence to show Crumbly knew his son was a danger to the public or that he had access to the gun. The prosecution pushing back, saying you bought the gun as a gift to your son. The 12-member jury now must decide if Crumbly is guilty of involuntary manslaughter for either failing to store the firearm in a way that could have obstructed his son from gaining access or failing to exercise what they call reasonable care of his son and prevent him from carrying out the mass shooting. So this comes just after James Crumbly's wife, Jennifer, was just last month found to be the first parent in the U.S. to be held criminally responsible for a mass school shooting. She will be sentenced in April on the same four counts of involuntary manslaughter. She faces up to 15 years in prison per count. We'll see what happens in that sentencing. We'll also see what happens in this case related to her husband here. The son, Ethan, who actually conducted the attack, he pled guilty as an adult in the deaths of the four students. He was sentenced to life in prison without parole. He did not testify in either of his parents' trials. The prosecution made a point of noting, Jill, in this trial, that Ethan wrote in his journal over the months and days leading up to the massacre, quote, "My parents won't listen to me about help or a therapist." And that was used as part of the case here the prosecution made to say the parents should have known.
From the Wall Street Journal, America's penny pinching is starting to hit dollar stores. Dollar Tree, which operates about 17,000 locations, including the Family Dollar chain, said that it would close about 1,000 Family Dollar stores over the next few years as it deals with inflation, store theft, and other issues. The company says that persistent inflation and reduced government benefits are pressuring customers, particularly at the lower income levels. Family Dollar caters to low-income shoppers, selling everything from cans of tuna for $1.25 to air fryers for as high as $30. While the discount brands sound familiar, Family Dollar locations are more concentrated in urban areas and sell groceries, cleaning products, and other items at various price points. And Dollar Tree stores are mostly in suburban locations and cater to middle-income households looking for knickknacks. Dollar Tree historically sold most items at a dollar, although in recent years it has added $3 and $5 items as well.
The CEO says they're going to be opening more stores under the Dollar Tree banner. They're going to be expanding their product offerings, charging prices higher than the chain has historically. They say they're gaining customers, especially among people making more than $125,000 a year.
From ABC News, we have gotten the autopsy report in the death of a non-binary student in Oklahoma that has gotten major national attention. 16-year-old Nex Benedict's death after a fight inside of an Oklahoma high school restroom has been ruled a suicide. That is according to the state medical examiner's office. A summary report shows that Benedict, who used they, them pronouns, had toxic levels of two drugs in their system and died of an overdose. A complete autopsy will be released in 10 days in accordance with state law. From the beginning of this investigation, Owosso police said that there were many indications that this death was the result of suicide, but they were waiting on final results. Nex was conscious and alert after a fight on February 7th when telling police about the attack by three girls that occurred after the teen squirted them with water. Nex died the next day after their mother called emergency responders to their home saying that Nex's breathing was shallow. That is according to audio also released by Owosso police.
Yeah, there's been a lot of attention on this case. They will be awaiting the final report in the coming weeks here. But this is the autopsy report they've been waiting for a while. Again, the police saying they suspected this, but didn't want to speak out of turn here and were awaiting this autopsy report. Meanwhile, students at the high school organized a walkout late last month to protest what they described as a pervasive culture of bullying that goes unpunished in the school. One of the organizers of the walkout said at the time that students had speculated that Nex may have died by suicide, but they believe the contributing factor was bullying.
From NBC News, some new numbers from a Gallup survey show that nearly 30% of Gen Z women identify as LGBTQ. Women ages 18 to 26 were more than twice as likely to identify as LGBTQ than their millennial counterparts. In all, the percentage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer adults in the U.S. continues to increase, reaching an all-time high of 7.6% in 2023, according to that new Gallup report. Broken down by gender, the survey of 12,000 people 18 and older across the country found that women were nearly twice as likely as men to identify as LGBTQ.
The percentage of adults who consider themselves other than heterosexual has more than doubled since Gallup first started asking this question back in 2012. Bisexuals made up the highest percentage of the respondents at just under 60%, gay men representing 18%, lesbians 15%, and transgender at just about 12%. The changes have been led by younger Americans, about 1 in 10 millennials and 1 in 5 Gen Z adults having LGBTQ status. Only 1% of the silent generation, that is Joe Biden's generation, pre-war. And as they go generation by generation, from silent to boomers to Gen X, et cetera, each generation is about twice as likely as the previous generation to identify as LGBTQ. Also notable is the gender divide, even among Gen Z, Jill. About 30% of Gen Z women identify that way, whereas 10% of Gen Z men identify that way.
From the Wall Street Journal, new research suggests links between ultra-processed foods and changes in the way that we learn, remember, and feel. These foods like chips, cookies, French fries, cereals, and snack bars can act like addictive substances, researchers say, to the point that some scientists are proposing a new mental health condition based on the addiction to processed foods. A diet in ultra-processed foods has been linked with obesity, type 2 diabetes, cancer, and cardiovascular disease, as well as an increased risk of depression, anxiety, and sleep problems. In a recent study published in the journal Cell Metabolism, researchers primed participants with two different kinds of snacks and saw how their brains later responded to a cue for a high-fat, high-sugar food, which many ultra-processed foods are. Scans of their brains showed that the participants who ate a high-fat, high-sugar snack had much higher activity in parts of the brain that create dopamine when they saw a cue telling them to expect another high-sugar, high-fat food.
You know, what's notable here, according to the study, is that the way the foods are produced might explain why they have this impact. To make items like chips, breakfast cereal, snack bars, Jill, as I record this, I'm eating popcorn right now, manufacturers often break down the cellular structure of the ingredients, stripping them of water and fiber, which makes them easy to chew, eat, and digest quickly. But it also means that those components hit our brains very quickly. So it makes the foods addictive here. In a different study, and the journal basically laid out multiple studies here over the last couple of years, in a different study, 4 days of having a breakfast high in saturated fat and added sugar was linked to reductions in performance on some learning and memory tests. That was a study that was done out of Australia. The science is still early, and researchers say there's still a lot they don't know. Not all ultra-processed foods are equal. Some of these studies, including that main study we mentioned from Cell Metabolism, studied people who ate ultra-processed foods every day. So there's a lot of contributing factors here, including your personal genetics here, that could impact this. At the same time, you have the makers of many of these foods defending their products, noting that there isn't a consistent, universally accepted definition of ultra-processed food. Jill, lesson in life. Everything in moderation. But it turns out the way these foods are wired, moderation is challenging.
See, I wouldn't consider popcorn. You said you're snacking on popcorn. I wouldn't consider that ultra processed.
I mean, I think you're speaking to these food manufacturers. You're speaking their language right now. What's the definition? I mean, I guess it depends.
I'm such a sucker.
I mean, Alex got me this popcorn, so I imagine it's not ultra processed because, like, you know, we tend to be on the healthier side in this household. But I don't know. I was eating a snack and I felt that way. But you make a good point. I might not actually be eating ultra processed food at this moment, but I did have a piece of chocolate earlier. So I had some today.
All right. Finally, from CNN, former University of Alabama football coach Nick Saban, who just retired, is speaking out about the state of college sports. Specifically, he says that the NCAA's name, image, and likeness rules go against the, quote, spirit of college athletics and could lead to a caste system moving forward. So in case you're unfamiliar, NIL, it stands for name, image, and likeness. It basically lets college athletes become paid endorsers and get paid for their success besides for school scholarships. Now, before July 1st of 2021, college athletes were not allowed to profit off of their name, image, and likeness. So that's the background here. In a roundtable discussion with a handful of U.S. senators, Saban spoke about how the current landscape of college athletics contributed to his decision to retire after the 2023 season.
All the things that I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. So it's always was about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life.
So he said he is not against NIL. He thinks it is a good opportunity for players to be able to create a brand for themselves. But currently, whichever universities are willing to, quote, pay the most money, raise the most money, buy the most players, he says have an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, slowly, college appears to be going the way of professional sports. At the same time, you do need to figure out a way to compensate these student athletes. Saban won 7 national championships during his time coaching Alabama and LSU. And he does say he favors some form of revenue sharing with the athletes over the current system, which he again called pay for play. Late last year, the NCAA president proposed a change to the way college athletes are compensated. The idea is to create a new subdivision within Division I for schools to directly compensate athletes. Jill, we told people last week about the fact that Dartmouth players voted to unionize as a way to get compensated. So this is a very active discussion right now when it comes to college athletics. All right, time for On This Day in History. We begin in the year 1943, 81 years ago today. FDR became the first president to fly in an airplane while in office. Now, it was not called Air Force One back then. It would eventually take on that name. And the design, the one that we are familiar with today, actually came to us in the early 60s. It was commissioned by Jackie Kennedy. That light blue color, she actually worked with a marketing executive at the time, who incidentally also designed the curvy Coke bottle. So a couple iconic items that have stood the test of time. She had initially gotten a look that was orange and red from the Air Force, but she wanted something a bit classier with that light blue that we now have known for several decades. All right, on this day in 1950, the FBI instituted the 10 most wanted fugitives list in an effort to publicize particularly dangerous fugitives. It continues to this day. On this day in 1964, Jack Ruby, who was convicted of the murder of Lee Harvey Oswald, remember, Oswald's accused of killing Kennedy. Oswald comes out of the jail the next day. Jack Ruby shoots him. Ruby was convicted on this day in history, but then that ruling was overruled when they said he did not receive a fair trial in Dallas because of all the publicity related to the assassination. And afterwards, a later date was set for a new trial. Ruby, in the interim, died of natural causes, and it reinforces the various conspiracies out there, Jill, that there was never a trial for Lee Harvey Oswald, Jack Ruby never got the full trial, and there are several other people who were there on that day, November 22nd, 63, who would die in the years following, leading to more suspicions. All right, since we're talking about Pi Day here, some science history. You know that photo of Albert Einstein sticking his tongue out? Some of you may have had it in your college dorm rooms.
Yes.
It was officially snapped today. It was officially snapped today, March 14th, 1951. It was actually Einstein's 72nd birthday. That was his birthday picture. It was snapped by a photographer on this day. Einstein would pass away just a few years later. But in other related news, Einstein born on Pi Day. Just fun fact for all the math and science nerds out there that, of all people, Albert Einstein shares his birthday with Pi Day.
There's no such thing as a coincidence, Moshe.
There you go. A bit of music news before we go here. On this day in 1995, Tupac became the first solo artist to have a number one album while in jail. At the time, he had just come out with Me Against the World, and he was serving an 8-month sentence in prison. And finally, 26 years ago today, Getting Jiggy With It by Will Smith hit number one on the Billboard charts. The soundtrack of the 90s, it's hard to play a few songs on the Spotify 90s mix without a Will Smith song coming up. It was decades before the slap heard around the world, Joe.
I was going to say, if it wasn't for that slap, it's possible we'd get more music.
Wait, can we enjoy? I think we can still enjoy Will Smith despite the slap, right? He's not canceled fully. Okay.
Definitely.
Good to know.
Definitely.
All right. Good to know.
All right. We want to thank you for listening to the Mo News podcast. If you like what you hear, share this with your friends. It will help us grow. Please follow us and subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and review us in the App Store. Moshe, I recently read many of our reviews, and thank you guys so much for those kind words. I know I really appreciate it, and so does Moshe.
Yeah, we are so grateful for the reviews, especially the good ones. Jill, they're all pretty good. Like
There's a couple
people who decided to light us on fire in a blaze of glory. But for the most part, more than 1,000 of them are really wonderful.
It's like, if you're not going to listen, just stop listening. Do you need to really write a review?
Did we really upset you that day? Like, you were having a bad day. Like, it wasn't our fault. Anyway, needless to say, leave a review if you can. We're grateful for it. Beyond that, consider joining Mo News Premium over at mo.news/premium. It's a way to support what we're doing here on this podcast, support the newsletter, the Instagram account. You also get access to a special premium podcast. We'll have another special edition out there this week, as well as the members-only Instagram account. So you'll get access to that, support what we're doing, support independent journalism, just for $7 a month or $70 a year. So lock in that right now over at mo.news/premium.
All right, bye, everyone. And remember, happy Friday Eve. It's real this time.
Have a great Friday Eve. We'll see you on Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Mo News Podcast.